Okay, so this is Bio 231, and it's October 19th, and human anatomy. So we got a test in a week from today, okay, on muscles and the introductory chapter, nervous system. So, all right, so only three chapters. You don't have a lot of questions at the end of the chapter. All right, so that means that I got to get some other questions from other places like lecture. So make sure you go over your lecture notes. I would say maybe this test is even more important for going over your lecture notes than other tests because there's only three chapters on the particular test. And it's going to be the same, about 90 questions. Okay. Okay. So I want to review some things that we were going over last time as well. But before I get started, does anybody have any questions? Any questions on anything? No? Okay. Well, practicums are still going on this week, and then when we're done with that, then we'll get that third test out of the way next time. All right, now make sure you bring in a picture ID with you on Monday. All right, so a couple of you have been sliding on that requirement a little bit, so make sure that you bring your Cypress College picture ID with you when you take a test. All right, so on the screen, well, I tell you what, let me ask you a basic question about nervous tissue. How many different kinds of cells make up nervous tissue? Okay, I heard a really good answer. What did I hear that I liked? Two, yeah, there's two basic kinds of tissues. And what are they? There are neuroglia and neurons. Which kind transmit electrical information? Neurons. And which kind are support cells? The neuroglia are support cells, right? All right, so what do I have on the screen right now? Neurons or neuroglia? Now, I do want you to be able to recognize these by their shape and tell me their name, but you should also be able to tell me what their function is. All right, so we went over this, but I want to go over it maybe one more time real quick. And this first one right here is an astrocyte. Who can remember some things, functions of an astrocyte? What does it do? Go ahead, check your notes. Hopefully I have it in your notes. What do I have in your notes? Who wants to take a stab at it? Glucose transport. Okay, from the blood into a neuron. It also adjusts ion levels in the extracellular fluid around these neurons right here, because ion levels are very important for nerve conduction. And as a matter of fact, could anybody tell me the names of a couple ions?
Calcium
is important. Sodium is really important. And we could say one more. And that is potassium. Okay. And your book uses a little nomenclature, which we have on the board right over here, the chemical symbols for these particular compounds, which you should be familiar with. What's the chemical symbol for calcium? This is easy, right? That's just Ca, and it has two positive charges on it. That's what makes it an ion, those electrical charges. What about sodium? What's the chemical symbol for sodium? So when we write out sodium, we don't have to spell it S-O-D-I-U-M every time. Na, right? This is sodium. And it only has a single plus charge. And then here's a tricky one, but it's not that tricky. Potassium, what's the chemical symbol for potassium? K, capital K, and that's an ion too. It has a positive charge. All right, so these, I believe, were named after the Greek words for calcium, sodium, and potassium. In Greek, sodium is natrium. In Greek, potassium is kalium, so that's how these symbols came about. So there is a little bit of rhyme and reason to it, but it doesn't relate really well to English. But just memorize that. Okay. So it's the astrocyte that helps adjust the extracellular levels of these ions because it's very important for developing the resting membrane potential and how a nerve impulse is conducted along a neuron. All right. Microglia cell, what is it responsible for? It resembles another kind of cell in your body that's in your blood. Okay, it resembles a white blood cell. It's important for immune response. It helps fight infections. It helps fight bacterial infections, viral infections, God forbid, fungal infections in the brain. Okay, maybe even tumors that are starting to grow in your brain. It can identify and kill the tumors before they become a problem. All right, and if we look at all of these cells on this slide right here, where would we find these cells within the nervous system? What division, what structural division of the nervous system would we find these in? Okay, well, let's talk maybe about some divisions of the nervous system. How would you break the nervous system, the whole nervous system, down into two parts? Central and peripheral. Okay, and just using that very basic designation, where would we find these cells? These would be in the central nervous system, right? So all of these, astrocyte, microglia, the ependymal, and oligodendrocytes are in the central nervous system. All right, the ependymal cells line cavities that are inside the brain. So these, again, that central nervous system, and there are big cavities in the brain filled with cerebrospinal fluid. The ependymal cells in certain locations help produce that cerebrospinal fluid. There are capillaries that join with the ependymal cells that secrete the fluid into the ventricles of the brain. So in a sense, it kind of acts like a synovial membrane that you're familiar with. And then lastly, these oligodendrocytes secrete a compound and wraps it around an axon. What's the name of the compound that it wraps around the axon?
Myelin.
Yeah, it's called myelin, and the sheath is what we call a myelin sheath. And that acts as an insulator. But functionally, what does it do for that axon? It does something very important.
It keeps it moving continuously.
Okay. That's pretty good. It keeps impulses, nerve impulses. All right. It has something to do with the nerve impulse. And this is it. If you're going to link up one term, it's the speed of conduction of a nerve impulse. If an axon is myelinated, it's very fast. Nerve transmission is very, very fast. If it's non-myelinated, it's relatively slow. Okay, and where do we find oligodendrocytes? Where would we find oligodendrocytes? You know what we should have right here? And as a matter of fact, on your slides, I don't know what, I didn't give you this to print out necessarily. You should put what? Central nervous system. These are all in the central nervous system. All right, as opposed to these cells right here. These are found in the peripheral nervous system. So first, let's start with the neuron that you see. How would you classify this neuron? The neuron, you could say yellow. Okay. Did I get close? Is it yellow or gold or green or something? I don't know. It looked kind of yellow to me. All right, but that's the neuron. See, here's the neuron. Here's the soma. What's another name for soma? The soma of a neuron is the cell body. Yeah, it's the cell body of this neuron. Okay, and by its shape, what kind of neuron is that? And by its shape, you should understand what its function is as well. Okay, but those are neuroglia. I'm interested in the neuron, right? So remember, always break down nervous tissue into two kinds of cells, neurons versus neuroglia. And this one, by shape, here's the cell body. There's a single process coming out of it. And so this is a unipolar, or you might want to say pseudo-unipolar. Some books have it like that, because that single process bifurcates into a central process and a peripheral process, right? So this is a unipolar kind of neuron. What's the function of a unipolar neuron? It even says on the slide. It's going to be sensory. Yeah. So until you get a really good feeling for this, you got to memorize it. Okay? You got to memorize the cell by its shape and by its function. All right. Then, but I also see some neuroglia that surround the neuron. And I see two kinds. All right? I see this one that looks like a string of pearls along the axon. And what are these? And what's the function of these? These are the Schwann cells. They're responsible for the myelin sheath. And because of these nodes of Ranvier between the Schwann cells, what can you tell me about a nerve impulse? The transmission of a nerve impulse along this axon. Is it fast or is it slow? it's going to be very fast because of that myelin sheath. All right, so that's the first kind of neuroglia cell, the Schwann cell. The second kind we see surrounding the cell body, and that's what we call a satellite cell. What does that remind you of? What does that remind you of? You might have to go back to a previous lifetime. Okay. It reminds me of like planets surrounding the sun. All right, and that's why they were named satellite cells, because you could see this large nucleus of the neuron right here, and it's surrounded by lots of other smaller cells. All right, so think of a solar system model, and that's why they were named. All right, satellite cells. All right, now where do you find this neuron and these neuroglia? What part of the nervous system? What are the two main parts again? You got central and peripheral. What part is this? This is peripheral, right? So make sure you can identify the location of these neuroglia cells. Okay. All right, so here is a nice comparison between these cells on the top picture, which are, what are these right here? Schwann cells. Where do you find them? Peripheral nervous system. All right, but they perform the same function as oligodendrocytes in the central nervous system. Okay, and then we talked about the two kinds of conduction. One was fast, one was slow, but they have some official terms. Which one transmits an electrical impulse by continuous conduction, the fast one or the slow one? The slow one, right? Which one transmits a nerve impulse by saltatory conduction? Saltatory. That's the fast one. And what does an axon have to have in order to transmit a nerve impulse by saltatory conduction?
Myelin.
It's got to be myelinated. That's right. Okay. And you see two different ways to myelinate a cell, whether it's peripheral nervous system by a Schwann cell or in the central nervous system, it's an oligodendrocyte. All right, how's that going? Hopefully you guys did some homework over the weekend. Otherwise, you're going to be really busy next weekend studying. Okay. Let me go back to my outline right here. All right, but here's the synopsis of everything that I've talked about so far. But you know what? You guys seemed a little bit cloudy on neurons. Maybe I should go back and review something about neurons as well. Where are neurons at? Right here. How many different kinds of neurons by shape do we have? That's right, we got three. There's only three. All right, the one that has many, many dendrites and one single axon, that's what we call a multipolar. Many, many dendrites, one axon, multipolar. What's the function of a multipolar? Where would we find multipolars? Okay, they're a motor neuron. What's another name for motor? I hope this is coming back to you just a little bit. Efferent, right? That's an efferent neuron. It takes, what does a motor or efferent neuron do? Where is it taking signals? From where to where? From CNS, which means central nervous system, to the periphery someplace, peripheral nervous system, right? So a multipolar neuron does that. But multipolar neurons are also found within the central nervous system. They're interneurons. They're important for integrating information and making decisions within the central nervous system. So here I see a nice motor neuron. Let me zoom in. All right, so here I see two kinds of multipolar neurons. Here is the spinal cord, and here is a blue one. And it's completely contained within the central nervous system. That is an interneuron. Sometimes we call that an association neuron, and it's multipolar. The other kind, another kind of multipolar neuron, goes from the central nervous system, leaving the spinal cord, all the way to this skeletal muscle. That's an efferent neuron, or a motor neuron, because when it's stimulated, what happens? Something moves, that muscle contracts, right? So that's why we call that a motor. What does a motor do in your car? Makes your car move, right? So that's why we call this a motor tract. And that is accomplished by a multipolar neuron. All right, what's another kind?
Bipolar,
which we see right here. All right, so here are the dendrites. Here are the axon terminals, and they're synaptic vesicles, and these little bulges right here, so these are the terminal buttons. So bipolar is important for special sensory organs, like the eye and the nose, right? Okay, for olfaction. So that's probably the least common kind of neuron, is this bipolar. And then lastly, this funny one right here. This is the unipolar, which we looked at not too many slides back. Right here is the cell body. What's going to be surrounding the cell body if this was in situ, right? If this was in somebody's body, what would be surrounding the cell body of this unipolar neuron? Satellite cells, right? Neuroglia cells. And this would be in the peripheral nervous system. One of these processes is in the peripheral nervous system, and the other process is going to go into the central nervous system. So it's taking signals from the periphery into the central nervous system. What kind of pathway do we call that, that takes signals from the periphery into the central nervous system? What do you got? You got afferent or efferent? So is that afferent or efferent pathway? Afferent brings signals into the central nervous system, right? Okay. So here we see it in this diagram right here. So here we have, what do we got right here? If I was going to test you, what would I test you on? What would you call this? I wouldn't give you credit if you called it skin. What would you call it? Very good. That's your integument, right? So here you have sensory receptors in the integument, the nerve impulse. Okay, gets transmitted toward the central nervous system. So this is a sensory neuron, otherwise known as an... What kind of neuron is this? Yeah, it's an afferent neuron. Afferent and sensory, exactly the same. Got to be on the tip of your tongue. Here is the nerve cell body, right here. And can you see that nice unipolar neuron very clearly? And so this is the peripheral process, because this is in your periphery, and then it enters the spinal cord. What part of the nervous system is spinal cord? Central nervous system. So that's why we call this the central process, right? It's not central because it's in the middle of the neuron. It's central because it's the part that goes into the central nervous system. Okay. And if you have thousands of nerves entering the spinal cord at this location like you do, you're going to have thousands of nerve cell bodies right here, which causes this little bulge. And this little bulge is called a ganglion. So go back to maybe the very first page and of your notes. And what do we have on the very, very first page? Right here. Peripheral nervous system. Where is that ganglion located? It's within the peripheral nervous system. Right? It's not quite in the central nervous system yet. So under peripheral nervous system, I want you to pencil something in right here. Ganglia are found in the peripheral nervous system. All right, so put ganglia, peripheral nervous system. But somebody should tell me what a ganglion is. What is a ganglion? What's a ganglion? It's a group of nerve cell bodies that are all clustered together someplace in the peripheral nervous system. All right, so that's a ganglion. There is a similar kind of object, all right, but it's found in the central nervous system. It's a group of nerve cell bodies. Maybe it's a group of nerve cell bodies of multipolar neurons. There's a group of them in some place in the body. And it's not called a ganglion if it's in the central nervous system. All right, and it gets a little confusing because we use this word a lot in biology. If you have a group of nerve cell bodies in the central nervous system, it's called a nucleus. I know. That's okay if you scrunch your forehead up on that one. They couldn't come up with a better term, right? So nucleus means what? All kinds of things. I mean, there could be a nucleus of an atom. There could be a nucleus of a cell, right? But this is a nucleus. It's a group of nerve cell bodies in the central nervous system someplace. All right? So... Let me go back Now, let me look at this slide right here. All right, what can you tell me about a bunch of nerve cell bodies? So here we have a multipolar neuron. Let's say this is someplace. All right, and which way are signals, which way do signals move on a neuron?
One way.
Only one way, and that is how? How do signals move through a neuron? By, I want to know by its structure. Tell me about the structures of a neuron and how signals move along a neuron. We said it's a one-way street. So how do you get onto the street? From the dendrite to the cell body and then down the axon. Okay. Now what part is non-myelinated? Even though this axon right here is myelinated, this is a myelinated fiber, but do you see any part of that neuron that is non-myelinated? Yeah, the dendrites don't have myelin on them. They never do. The cell body never has myelin on it, only the axon. So when we put thousands of these things together, they have, even in gross anatomy, they have, just by the appearance to your naked eye, they have a different appearance. Right? If we see thousands of axons all together and they're myelinated, they look white. Right? And if we have thousands of nerve cell bodies and dendrites all grouped together, they don't look white. Guess how they look? They look gray. So those are the two possible kinds of colors. They're going to be very bright or white colored or gray colored. So what does a group of nerve cell bodies look like? Are they going to look like gray matter or white matter? They look like gray matter. So they're darker spots within our brain, so they're easy to recognize. You're not going to have to recognize a whole lot of them in this particular class. All right. But if there is a dark spot inside our brain due to a group of nerve cell bodies and dendrites that are not myelinated, right? It looks dark. We call that a nucleus. So go back to your very first page of central nervous system right here. All right, we had ganglia in the peripheral nervous system. What's the counterpart in the central nervous system? It's a nucleus. And how does a ganglion and a nucleus look? What's the color? They're kind of grayish looking. They're darker compared to myelinated axons someplace. Okay. All right, so that's a little, some terminology that distinguishes the central nervous system from the peripheral nervous system. Something else distinguishes these two, and that is, we go back to this picture right here. Here we see a number of axons, three axons in what part of the nervous system are these axons located right here, where I have my cursor circling? Is that, that's central nervous system, because you see those oligodendrocytes right there, okay? And we're going to have thousands of these axons going someplace from one part of the brain to another, and they're myelinated. Guess how they're going to look? What's their general appearance going to look like? Gray or white? They're going to look whitish, right, because of the myelin around them. All right, so this is what we call a tract, T-R-A-C-T. A tract is found in the central nervous system. But what the heck is a tract? It's a bunch of axons going someplace, and these axons are myelinated. So they have a tendency to kind of look whitish. Okay? All right, so put that within your diagram right here. Central nervous system. You've got what? Nuclei and tracts. What's the difference between a nuclei and a tract? A nucleus has got what part of a neuron? The cell body. And a tract has what part of a neuron? The axons. And it's got to be myelinated, otherwise it won't look white. All right, so over here, peripheral nervous system, what do we got so far? We got only ganglion. All right, and well, what's a ganglion, just to refresh my memory? A group of nerve cell bodies in the peripheral nervous system. Myelinated or not myelinated? Not myelinated, that's why they kind of look gray. Well, there are myelinated axons in the peripheral nervous system, just like in the central nervous system, but we don't call them tracts. We call them nerves, okay? I know you're laughing. Okay, that was a big discussion for something that you probably already knew in fifth grade. right? So a nerve is nervous tissue that is in your peripheral nervous system, but don't forget it's myelinated. All right, so let's take a look at a nerve. Nerves in the peripheral nervous system have a little bit more structure compared to tracts in the central nervous system. And I'm sure this is an exam figure right here. Okay, this might remind you of what? A muscle. How is a muscle broken down? A muscle organ. What's the basic building block of a muscle organ? Well, that's a muscle fiber. Muscle fiber. But I'm still thinking big, like biceps brachii. You got fascicles. You got muscle bundles. Well, guess what? In a nerve, so here is a nerve. All right, there are fascicles inside the nerve as well. All right, so the connective tissue sheath around the whole nerve is what we call the epineurium. And inside the epineurium, we've got fascicles. We also have blood vessels because all of these are living cells. They need oxygen and glucose, and they need to get rid of waste products. The connective tissue that separates out the different fascicles are what we call the perineurium. And then there is even some connective tissue that surrounds the myelin sheath, which is surrounding every axon within this nerve right here. And that's what we call the endoneurium. Right, so epi means on top of, endo means the innermost layer. Right, and then the middle layer around the fascicles, surrounding the fascicles is the perineurium. So that should make pretty good sense to you because you can use a model of a muscle in your mind. Okay, and then here we can see this myelinated axon. So if you see something like this, where are you going to find something like this? Central nervous system or peripheral nervous system? Okay. You have these same structures in the central and peripheral, but you should know what they look like and what they're called. So is this thing here called a nerve or a tract? It's a nerve. Where do we find nerves? Peripheral nervous system. Where do we find tracts? Central nervous system. Yeah, central nervous system. Okay, so in that very first page, make sure you got for peripheral nervous system, ganglion nerves. Central nervous system, nuclei, and tracts. All right, and know something about the difference in terms of its myelination. Okay, that's probably pretty important. Okay, so you're going to have to look over these pages a couple more times. Well, basically, what we just went over is kind of tucked away at the very end of this chapter right here. All right, was just these definitions, but I just didn't want to read the definitions to you. I wanted you to work the information a little bit in your mind. All right, what is the cortex of an organ? What's the cortex of an organ? Like bone, cortical bone is what kind of bone? You've learned maybe a couple different ways you could talk about cortical bone. It's compact bone. It's the bone that's superficial, say on the femur. It's the superficial bone. It's very compact. The medullary bone has what kind of nature to it? It's spongy, right? It's deeper bone. So it has all these trabeculae bony plates at intersecting angles. All right. So the cortex is the superficial part of any organ. And our brain is no different. There is a deep part and there's a superficial part. The superficial part we call the cortex. And the cortex is made up of gray matter. So what can you tell me about the cerebral cortex? Is gray matter? What do we have there on the cortex of our brains? You've got nerve cell bodies and dendrites. And is it myelinated or not myelinated? Is non-myelinated, so it kind of looks gray. Okay, but deeper in the central nervous system, that is made up of tracts, right? So deep inside the central nervous system, in general, what is it going to look like if there's tracts carrying nerve impulses? It's going to look white, but every once in a while, you're going to find a dark area inside the central nervous system, which is a group of nerve cell bodies. What do we call that? That is in the central nervous system, that is a nucleus, or nuclei would be plural. Okay. All right. What's the counterpart to a nucleus in the central nervous system? In the peripheral nervous system. That's what we call a ganglion. All right. So what can you tell me about white matter in the nervous system? White matter is what? It's got to be myelinated. And what part of a neuron is myelinated? Axons, right? And what part of the neuron is the axon? Is it the receiving part or the sending part? That's the sending part. So white matter is what? Sending signals? How? Fast or slow? Fast or slow. White matter is sending signals because you said there were axons that send signals. Is it fast or slow? Ah, these are good questions. Some people say fast, and I like that answer because if it's white matter, it's myelinated, so it's conducting nerve impulses by saltatory conduction. All right, so tracts send information places fast, right, if it's white matter. All right, and a nerve tract basically is just what? White matter in the central nervous system. It's sending signals someplace very, very fast. And a nerve is basically the same kind of thing, but it's found where? In the peripheral nervous system. It's myelinated axons in the peripheral nervous system, but it also has some connective tissue sheaths around it. And if it's a big nerve, it even has its own blood supply as well. Okay, so nerves we're familiar with. All right, well, I do want to go over one more time some of this electrophysiology, just a little bit, right? I told you about these ions right here. These are really important for maintaining the health and function of neurons. So let's see. I didn't show you this figure in your book, but the latest figure in your book is really, really nice. It's this one right here. All right, it's not quite shown like this. It's shown in just a nice vertical array. This is just a little bit different. So let's look at, I'll tell you what kind of neuron does this look like to you by its shape? Multipolar. Yeah, so you guys are going to have to draw some flashcards up or something and know the names of these things. So what's the function of a multipolar? It's a motor neuron or a association or interneuron, same thing. All right, so we said that all cells in your body, if they're alive, act like what? They act like that thing that's in your cell phone that you can, that acts like a battery, right? It manipulates electricity because of these different ions, all right? So when a cell is at rest, notice the inside is what compared to the outside? It is negative, right? So that's one thing you just got to memorize. Don't ask me to describe why that is. That's the next class. All right, but you gotta just memorize a few key points that will make the next class 100 times, well, maybe not 100 times, maybe 10,000 times easier. All right, so definitely memorize this stuff. All right, so a cell, if it's alive, acts like a battery. It's negative on the inside, and it's positive on the outside, because a battery always has what? How many terminals? Two, right? So those two terminals are the inside of the cell and the outside of the cell. All right, and what maintains the battery nature of the cells is due to two ions. What are the names of the two ions that maintain the electrical nature of this cell? Potassium and sodium. Do you see it right here? Here's sodium, and here is potassium. This one actually should be a plus. It's a plus in your book that signifies that it's an ion. All right, so here is, so not only got to know sodium and potassium, but you got to know when the cell's at rest, where is sodium high and where is potassium high? Where at, when the cell's at rest and alive, where is sodium at a high concentration? It's high outside the cell. Where is potassium high? Is it the same on both sides? Is it high on the outside, high on the inside? Potassium is high on the inside. All right, so that's another thing you got to memorize. Where are these ions high? Okay, so that's when this neuron is not sending information. But when it starts to send information, right, it develops a nerve impulse, which we call an action potential. And an action potential has got only two parts, so it's not too difficult to memorize. Okay, and the two parts, anybody remember what the two parts were called? There is depolarization number one, and then following depolarization you have repolarization. So that's what makes up an action potential. All right, and then the last thing you got to know is what causes depolarization. One of these ions is going to move across the membrane. And you got to know what ion, and you got to know the direction. So what causes depolarization we see right here in B. Depolarization shows what? Yeah, Na. What's Na? Sodium. And which way is sodium moving? Sodium is entering the cell. So sodium entering the cell is synonymous with what one word? Depolarization, and that's the first phase of an action potential. Okay. Depolarization, don't forget, action potential has got how many parts? Two parts. The first part is depolarization. The second part is repolarization. Now we got to figure out what repolarization is due to. It's due to an ion and an ion moving across the membrane. What ion? Forget about sodium, because sodium is for depolarization. The ion responsible for repolarization is potassium. Okay? And where is potassium high in a resting cell? Inside. All right? So actually potassium loves to leave the cell, and when it leaves the cell, it does what? It repolarizes. All right? So you got to know the resting membrane potential is due to two ions. What are those two ions? Sodium and potassium. All right. When we excite and when we send an action potential down a neuron, an action potential has got two parts to it. What are the two parts? Depolarization and then repolarization. Depolarization is caused by what? Which one of these ions? Sodium doing what? Entering the cell. Depolarization is followed by repolarization, which is due to potassium. And which way is potassium moving? Out of the cell. Okay, and this event travels down a nerve axon, right? And we call that a nerve impulse. So when an action potential is propagated down a nerve axon, we call that a nerve impulse. Furthermore, you could tell me two different ways that a nerve impulse can travel down an axon. What are the two ways that you know of? And it depends on the structure of the surrounding material, the material that surrounds the axon. So this is a nice structure-function relationship. If it doesn't have the right structure, it won't send the nerve impulse quite the same way. What are the two ways that you know of? Continuous conduction versus saltatory conduction. That's right. So if it's saltatory, what's surrounding that axon? It's got to be a myelin sheath on there. Right. And what does that mean? It's fast. Right. It's fast. Okay. All right. So, guess what? I still got a couple more things to talk about in this chapter. Not too much more, but a little bit more. Actually, a couple other things. Okay. We got to talk about a reflex arc, reflexes, something about reflexes. So let's look at this reflex. You know what? I want to go back to maybe this slide right here. Okay, kind of a, almost like a cartoon-ish kind of illustration. But this is really nice because I can see spinal cord right here. Spinal cord is what part of your nervous system?
Central.
That's central nervous system, right? And then out over here is what part of your nervous system? Is this in your spinal cord or brain? No. What do we call that that's not in your spinal cord or brain?
Peripheral
nervous system, right? All right, so here we have this blue neuron that is picking up stimuli in your periphery and carrying it toward the central nervous system. What kind of neuron does that? You could say sensory, or you could say, if you want to impress somebody, you would say Oh, that's an afferent neuron, right? That's an afferent neuron. And what kind of neuron? By its structure, what kind of neuron is an afferent neuron? Is it multipolar, bipolar, unipolar? The most general kind, the most common kind is the unipolar. And can you identify this one as a unipolar? Yeah, because here's just one single process coming off the cell body right here. All right. So the sensory neuron or afferent neuron is a bipolar. Here's a cell body. What do we call this group of nerve cell bodies right here in the peripheral nervous system? Wow, we're really hammering this hard today, but this is good. You got to know this. What do you call a group of nerve cell bodies in the peripheral nervous system? Look at your first page of your notes again. That's a ganglion. Right. Okay. And so this is the peripheral process. Here is the central process. That means that it's going to enter the spinal cord or central nervous system. And here is a junction between nerve cells. All right. So what is the structural and functional unit of communication between cells called? A synapse. So here is a synapse. And you should know two different kinds of synapses. You have a chemical synapse and electrical synapse. This is a chemical synapse right here. All right, so here is a cell. This is the interneuron. Interneurons or association neuron. And this one is similar to all association neurons or interneurons. All right, where is the location? If you wanted to tell me where would you find an interneuron, where would I have to look? Would I have to look peripheral nervous system, central nervous system, or in between the two? Or where would you find them? They're found completely within where? The central nervous system, right? Because there's a spinal cord. There's no part of it that is outside the spinal cord. That's a characteristic of association neurons or interneurons. Never found any part of them in the peripheral nervous system. All right, so this one passes on the signal to this neuron, which leaves the central nervous system going to some effector organs. So what kind of neuron takes information from the central nervous system out to the periphery? It's got two names. And you got to tell me two names. At least next Monday you got to tell me. What are the two kinds? They're synonyms of each other. It's a motor neuron or an efferent neuron, right? Motor or efferent. And does anybody know what kind of shape that neuron is? Is it what? Bipolar, unipolar, or multipolar? It's a multipolar neuron. All right, we're going to do a flash quiz probably pretty soon and really work that information. All right, so this kind of resembles a little bit of a loop right here. All right, so let's actually put in some real world information to this figure. All right, and we're going to look at a reflex. All right, so here basically is that same picture, but we have also put some other information on here. Let's move it up just a little bit. Okay, so what do we got right here? What am I circling right here?
Spinal cord.
And what is that, CNS or PNS? That's the central nervous system. What kind of neurons do we find completely within the central nervous system? Like right here, that's an interneuron. Oh, guess what else? Look at this area right here. Does it look light or dark? It looks dark. Okay, what are the two kinds of matter that we have? We have got gray matter and white matter. This is the dark one. This is gray matter. So what can you tell me about this area right here? Is it myelinated or non-myelinated? It's non-myelinated. So this interneuron right here is non-myelinated, right? This area is mostly nerve cell bodies, dendrites, and this axon is not myelinated. So it means it's slow, but it's what? Tiny. So it doesn't really matter too much. Right, and I see a couple synapses right here. So I see three neurons, namely an afferent neuron, an interneuron, and an... What kind of neuron is this right here? That's an efferent, right, or a motor neuron. All right, so this is going to be a response loop. And we're going to call that a reflex in here. And I see five steps in this response loop, but I actually want you to know seven. Okay? So the first thing that I want you to know about is this thing right here. What does that look like? This is a pin or a nail or a tack or something. All right. This is what we call a stimulus. It's going to provoke this tissue right here. It's going to issue some kind of stimulus to this tissue, a pain stimulus. Right? And in order for you to feel pain, what do you need? You need a receptor, right? So the first part of a response loop is always going to be a stimulus. Without a proper stimulus, right? If you have eyes to see and there's no light, are you going to see anything? No. You need a stimulus. So for your eyes, the stimulus would be light. For pain receptors, it's going to be tissue damage. So this tack right here is the stimulus. And what perceives the stimulus? The receptor. The receptor sends information toward the central nervous system via this afferent neuron. All right, past this ganglion right here into the central nervous system. It's passed on to this interneuron or association neuron. All right, so that's the fourth part of this response loop. This interneuron makes a decision on what to do and maybe shares some information. All right, it says, oh, this is damaging stimulus. What are you going to do to damaging stimulus that you feel on your body? Maybe you pick up a hot pan and this interneuron right here says, oh, wow, that's damaging to your hand. Guess what's going to happen? Are you going to grab it harder or what? You're going to drop it. Okay, what do you need in order to drop something? You need some extensors to contract, right? So this interneuron is going to send information down this motor neuron, otherwise known as a efferent neuron, to extensor muscles to what? Release the object so that you stop burning your hand. So this right here is what we call an effector. The muscle is an effector. And then the last part that I want you to label in on your notes right here is that the effector always produces a response. All right, so that really completes a response loop. So what's not on this figure is stimulus and response. So a reflex always starts with what? A stimulus. And it always ends with a response. And then what you got to fill in are just these pieces. In order to feel a stimulus, you got to have a receptor. And then that information has got to go to the central nervous system via sensory neuron. Central nervous system has got to make sense of that information. And the neuron that does that is the interneuron. The interneuron makes a decision, sends it out the motor neuron or efferent to the effector organ. And the effector organ produces a response that protects your body. All right, so that's a nice response loop. All right. Did we ever talk about different effector organs in here? I don't think we talked much about them. We only have talked really about skeletal muscle. Okay? What kind of control is skeletal muscle under?
Voluntary
control. Okay? But there are many organs and other kinds of muscle that are not under voluntary control. Anybody give me any examples of things that you don't have conscious control of in your body? Your heart? Smooth muscle, right? Which are in reproductive organs, digestive tract, respiratory tract, all right, and glands. You don't have control of glands either. That's under automatic or autonomic control. But those are all different effectors. All right, so we'll talk about those pretty soon. All right, so let's go to an exam figure right here. So you understand the basic operation of a response loop. Now here is a reflex. All right, and this all happens at the level of the spinal cord right here. All right, so here you see an interneuron. And does anybody have any idea what's happening in your spinal cord? Where's your consciousness located? We haven't talked about this. Maybe in lab some of you have talked about this. All right, but what part of your central nervous system are you aware of your surroundings? All right, that's the brain. As a matter of fact, the cerebral cortex, the highest centers in the brain. All right, so you don't have any awareness from your spinal cord. But look how important the spinal cord is in protecting your body. Look at these reflexes. So a reflex is a response that's produced by the central nervous system that protects your body before you even know that your body is being damaged, because it's happening at the level of the spinal cord. In order for you to feel this stimulus right here, the signal has to enter the spinal cord, and then guess what? Guess where it has to go? It has to go from the spinal cord all the way up to the brain before you have an appreciation of it. And that takes time to happen, right? So your body is being damaged. So these reflexes are really handy because it produces a very fast and immediate response before you even have the awareness that your body is being damaged. We have two different kinds of reflexes on this diagram right here. We have a monosynaptic and a polysynaptic. And what do we mean by synaptic? What's a synapse again? What is a synapse? It's the, what, structural and functional unit of communication between cells, and in this particular case, it's going to be these neurons. Let's look at this monosynaptic reflex first. All right, so here we have somebody's thigh and somebody's knee, and here we have a stimulus. We have a hammer, and we pound what? Actually, we don't pound. We could if you want a really good reflex, but you can just tap it. What it's being tapped right here? You might have to know this for the practicum this week. What's being tapped? The patellar ligament, right? So that stretches the patellar ligament that pulls on the patella, which then pulls on the tendon of the quadriceps, and then that stretches the quadriceps. But in a part of your brain, okay, namely the cerebellum knows what the tension should be on this quadriceps right here, for standing or sitting or whatever, and now you've done what to it? You've stretched it, which is a signal from outside your body. The cerebellum says, hey, that quadriceps shouldn't be stretching. We want it a certain length. All right, so that receptor sends a signal via this what? Sensory neuron. And it synapses within the spinal cord on a motor neuron directly, so there's one synapse. And it causes this muscle to contract, protecting that muscle from overstretching. So this is a monosynaptic reflex. Sometimes we call this the knee-jerk reflex. And it happens what? Really fast, like that. You really can't control that. So your knee is going to, or your leg is going to extend even before, if you had your eyes closed, even before you would feel that somebody tapped your patellar ligament right here. Very, very fast, monosynaptic reflex. All right, a polysynaptic reflex is sort of similar. All right, it always starts with a stimulus. It's picked up by a receptor. It sends a signal in via the sensory neuron, and here is a nice unipolar neuron into the spinal cord. Here is an interneuron, right, within the spinal cord, and the spinal cord then takes that stimulus and sends it back down to this effector organ. And what effector organ does that kind of look like to you? That could be a biceps brachii, maybe brachialis. And what's that going to produce? Flexion of the forearm that's going to withdraw your hand from that painful stimulus. And what do we call that when this muscle contracts? That's a response, right? So don't forget, a reflex always starts with a stimulus and it ends with a response. Okay, so this is the polysynaptic reflex. So make sure you can label all of these things. But don't forget the underlying beauty of this system right here is what? It's protecting your body. How's it going about protecting your body? Does it take a long time? Do you got to figure a lot of stuff out? You got to say, oh, you know, it's Tuesday, I don't have to worry about it. Or, it's Friday, I really got to worry about it. How does this reflex work? Boom, fast, right? Without you even being aware of what's happening. Because why? Where is it happening? Where is this interneuron located? In the brain or the spinal cord? In the spinal cord, right? So that's the beauty of a reflex. Okay. All right, so that you got to know. When we get into the next chapter, you might have to know something about this slide. Oh, well, let's just talk about this one just a little bit. Here I see a slice through somebody's brain. It's just an illustration. It's not really like an MRI or anything. All right, what kind of slice is that? Is that transverse? Or is that sagittal? Or is it, somebody actually said it, that's a nice coronal slice, right? It's a nice coronal or frontal slice. All right, we're going to learn the lobes of the brain. All right, but what did we say about the cerebral cortex? It's gray matter, which means what? What makes up gray matter? Nerve cell bodies. And look, here's a nice nerve cell body of a multipolar neuron. Okay. And then here is an axon moving away. And what can you tell me about this axon right here? It makes up white matter within the brain. And what's white matter again? Myelinated axons that are going someplace. Right? And inside the brain, we have different areas that are filled with gray matter, like this one right here. This is a nucleus, and the nuclei have different names. This nucleus right here is what we call the thalamus. These out over here are called the basal nuclei. And between the thalamus and the basal nuclei is this white matter. This white matter right here, which is mostly descending tracts. Ah, okay, I forgot the name, but I remember the name. You're going to have to know the name sooner or later. I'll have to mention it a couple of times. Not for the test, but for the next test. This is what we call the internal capsule of the brain. Okay, so the internal capsule, what could you tell me about the internal capsule? Filled with nerve cell bodies and dendrites or tracts? It's filled with tracts, and so it kind of looks white, right? So it's easy to see because of the contrast between the nuclei on either side. And the internal capsule is responsible primarily for what kind of tracts? Motor or sensory tracts? Look at that arrow right there. Is that arrow going up or is it going down? The arrow is going up or going down. And what does that mean in terms of efferent and afferent? If it's going up, it is sensory or afferent. If it's going down, it's motor or efferent, right? So those are efferent tracts going through the internal capsule. It's going to send information out to your periphery to do what? Produce some kind of response, right? Like to contract a muscle or something like that. Okay, so I just wanted to use this slide to reinforce your idea that the cortex is gray matter, right? The deeper parts of the brain can either be nuclei, which is gray matter, or white matter being tracts. And here you can see a tract right here. Okay. Now some general architecture of nervous circuits, neuronal circuits. All right, we've got three different kinds of circuits right here. We've got diverging, converging, and reverberating. And we should know something about why these different circuits are used in the brain. All right, so here we see a diverging kind of neuronal circuit. Diverging circuits are used when information is going to be shared to different parts of the body. All right? And a good example of this diverging circuit would be also applicable to that polysynaptic reflex. All right? So say somebody was playing a joke on you as you came into class and sat down. They put a tack on the chair. All right? Has anybody ever done that to you? Raise your hand. Anybody ever done that to you? No. Oh, that's really nice. Okay. It's a gentler, kinder world. That's nice. Okay. Well, if you were to sit on that tack, all right, where would that information go? First, it would go to the spinal cord, right, and it would elicit what, some reflexes right away so that you'd jump up out of the chair. But then, would you ever realize what happened? Yeah, because the information not only goes to the skeletal muscles to withdraw from the tack, but the signals also would be shared with neurons that take it to your brain. All right, so that information would be shared with all kinds of different parts of your body. What else would happen besides you jumping off the tack? Where else would that information go? Probably to glands. You would start sweating. What about your heart rate? Would it slow down? No, it'd probably speed up. So that information would be shared and also affect your heart. Right? So it would be shared in all different parts of your body. So that would be accomplished by this diverging circuit right here. All right. You might also have a converging circuit where information from different parts of your body, from maybe different receptors, converge on this neuron, and then this neuron right here then integrates the information up and decides what to do with all of this different information. Okay, so for instance, we didn't have that emergency drill in this class, but this semester, you know, we always have an emergency drill. But say right now, if all of a sudden we heard the fire alarm go off, what would we do? We would probably leave the room, right, because there could be a fire. But if it was an emergency drill, right, and we were supposed to stay in the room, right, when we hear the fire alarm, would we, back during that emergency drill, what other kinds of information would we use to decide what to do? Well, we had some a priori knowledge saying, well, it's just a drill. You can stay in the room, just lock the doors. That was supposed to be the drill earlier this semester, right? So in that particular case, we had information. We heard the alarm, but we also read all the emails and listened to the instructor by saying, oh, we're supposed to just, hunker down in place, and we're supposed to turn the lights off but not leave the room and lock the door. So we had a lot of different inputs to determine what our behavior was going to be. All right, so that's what we mean by integrating different sources of information. All right, so all of these different inputs would affect what we would do, our particular behavior. A reverberating circuit is sort of interesting because we see three neurons back to back, but this middle neuron, look what happens to this middle neuron. Guess where it goes? It not only stimulates the third neuron, but what does it do? It goes back and then stimulates the first neuron in this particular circuit. So as soon as we stimulate this first neuron in some way, guess what happens to this first neuron? It passes the information on, but then what else? It gets re-stimulated. It passes the information on, and it gets re-stimulated. It passes the information on, and what happens to it? It gets re-stimulated again. So this happens over and over and over and over and over again. And this is really important because this is the kind of thing that happens to you when you wake up in the morning. Right? Sometimes a little bit more difficult than others. Sometimes you really got to kickstart this neuron right here with a little caffeine maybe sometimes. But this kind of circuit provides a wakeful state. Right? It maintains consciousness for you for that whole period of how long can you stay awake for? I don't know, 12 hours, 15, 16 hours, something like that. Maybe 24 if you really put your mind to it, or longer, all right? But that's going to cause damage to your body if you do that. So this kind of circuit is very important for producing a wakeful state, and in the next chapter we'll see what part of your brain is responsible for that. But that's not something you can take for granted, because there are some people that can't stay awake. What do we call that pathology when somebody might be sitting in lecture right now and then all of a sudden their head just goes clunk right down on the table. They fall asleep. That's narcolepsy, because this kind of circuit is not functioning properly in a certain part of their brain. All right, so that's a really important kind of circuit, and we'll see where that is. All right, a couple other kind of ways of thinking about how the brain is put together. Sometimes information is processed in the serial mode. Oh, dang, I didn't pass the sign. Did I pass the sign-in sheet around? Yes. It's around. Where's the sign-in sheet at? Pass it down to the front. Yeah, just pass it down to the front. And if you need to sign it on the way down, that's great. If not, it'll be here when you walk out. Okay, serial processing would be, for instance, like the polysynaptic reflex that we saw, where information is taken from a receptor, it's brought to the central nervous system, and then that information is passed back out through a motor pathway to an effector to protect your body somewhere. All right, so that would be serial processing. Parallel processing, though, really is the hallmark of how our brains like to function and the architecture of our brains. And that means that we have a single neuron that passes information through these diverging circuits to larger and larger parts of our brain. A really good example of that would be, for instance, maybe let's just say this is a neuron right here in your nose. Okay? And you smell something. Maybe you smell a leather smell. All right? And smell is really important. It can elicit all kinds of very powerful memories from our distant past. All right? And maybe you smell a leather coat or something that you bought sometime when you were on vacation. Right? And you can pick out that particular smell. So as soon as you smell that smell, right, not only do you smell the smell, but you start to think of that nice leather coat. You think about where you were when you got it. Maybe you were up in San Francisco someplace or Phoenix having a nice time. Remember all your friends, right? You remember the time of year that it was. Okay, and you're flooded with all of these memories just by that one particular stimulus, right? So that is parallel processing. And that's really how our brains like to function. When you think of something, it can go in a thousand different directions, thinking of all different kinds of episodes in your life. And what I find fascinating about that is the serial processing is how a TV show works. But guess what's a good analogy for parallel processing? Not just watching a TV show, but using a computer and doing what? Mousing around on the internet. Because what can you do on the internet? You can go from one topic to another topic and another topic, and pretty soon it's really hard to keep track of all the topics that you're interested in, because it's what? Parallel processing. And I think that's why the internet is just so fascinating, because it really emulates the way our brains like to work in terms of filling in information. Okay? And when people get on the internet, guess what they think about watching TV? They're kind of bored with TV. Right? Because it just doesn't provide that same kind of learning experience that you have, say, on the internet. All right, so that's something about serial and parallel processing, and guess what? Embryology, we don't have to talk about in here, so we're not going to talk about embryology, and I think that's it for this particular chapter. Yeah, so we talked about everything, and during lecture I talked about multiple sclerosis. Okay, so you can read that little bit in the chapter, and that's when the myelin sheath is destroyed by somebody's own immune response, so we call that an autoimmune disease. Okay. All right, so next time I want you to do your pre-lecture reading assignment. We're going to start with central nervous system, and I'm going to tell you just a couple things about the central nervous system. All right, make sure you know something about the brainstem, the diencephalon, the cerebrum, all right, and cerebellum. And we're going to talk about those things next time. Oh, spinal cord, that's also part of the central nervous system. So make sure you know the major parts of the central nervous system. All right, so that's it for today. Thank you. Unless there's questions.